Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
It's Friday, the 26th of January, which means the longest month ever is nearly over. Only three more months to go. But it also means, as it's Friday, it's time for the Inside EVs podcast. As ever, I am your host, Alex Goy, joined by the effervescent, wonderful, expert human beings, such as the boss man, Patrick George. Hello, Patrick.
Hello, everyone.
Lacey, Misco Electric, how are we doing?
Hello, everyone. I'm great.
Hooray. And last but not least, Hazel Southwell. Hello, Hazel. How you doing?
I'm good. Hello, Alex.
Hi. Have we all had good weeks? Anything exciting happened? They're all shaking their heads with the sort of...
Did anything exciting happen?
Edge of ennui.
I was going to go into this later, but the highlight of my week, honestly, is I have this Volvo XC40 Recharge I'm driving this week. Delightful car. I'm happy to tell you more about it, but it has...
I'm in it right now.
Yes, I should add that because I'm trying to remember that not everyone watches this on YouTube, which you can also do every week. But I'm in this Volvo XC40 Recharge, and the highlight of my week was playing around with the Google in-car infotainment system and asking it after Disco Inferno came on the satellite radio, what happened to 50 Cent? And this car gave me a detailed explanation of all of his legal troubles, including his sex tape that got him sued. And it even cited its sources, LinkedIn. And I was like, that was very thorough, Google Volvo. Thank you very much. So that was the best thing that happened to me this week, period.
I mean, I can't beat that.
Car should win the awards just for that. That's the highlight.
I
think this is great because this podcast is educating on EVs and also in EVs.
There you go. A teaching tool for all involved.
I can't beat that. I've got nothing. So without further ado, let's do some EV news.
EV news.
What a week it has been, friends. Obviously, the big story is the Porsche Macan. We're going to talk about that in a bit. But first, Tesla again, because Tesla is all-encompassing, omnipotent, and everywhere. Two stories from them. First one, Q4 earnings. They were still good, but below expectations. A bit of a roundup for you. They've had 17 quarters in a row in profit. They had 25.167 billion in revenue. Shares are worth set, or a share profit was 71 cents. It was expecting 25.598 to 25.640 billion in revenue and a little bit more on the shares. Didn't quite get it. It had a free cash flow of 4.4 billion. They made 500 million on profit for services and things like that, which is a good because they made profit in 2023, but in 2019 they were down 500 million. So that's basically a good. The revenue has grown 5% in Q4, which is great. Operating income is down a bit, but it's still $2.1 billion. So I wouldn't be cross with that, really.
I'd be fine if someone gave me $2.1 billion. I can stretch that for a bit, I think.
I would be happy. Inside EV's freelance budget would be incredible. operating income is down a smidge. Deliveries-wise, they delivered 484,507 cars. Most of that was a 3 and a Y of 462,000. They produced 495,000. In 2023, overall, Tesla delivered 1.8 million cars, but produced 1.85. So who wants a deal on a Model 3, eh? What are our thoughts, friends, before we get on to the other Tesla story?
I think the main thing here is that they had a very good year at Tesla, very good sales year. I think they're taking a hit because they cut the prices on the Model 3 and Model Y so much, so their margins are a lot thinner. And, you know, they're like, well, we had a pretty good year. They warned their investors that, you know, it's going to be a slower year until they ramp up to something very important we're about to talk about. And it's like, yeah, we're getting to this period where it's not going to be just permanent growth forever. And as a result, the stock price plummeted and wiped $80 billion off the market value yesterday. So capitalism, everybody.
Yeah, this sort of quest for endless growth, at some point it does have to stop. They have to go, like, we can't have all the money, because if one person has all the money, no one has any, and then everyone's sad and there's poverty. It's just, there's a limited amount of money in the world.
No, Alex, you're misunderstanding capitalism. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And if you consider that, like, there might be some pyramid scheme aspect to this, then you're not allowed to think that. Anyway, they're going to be selling Teslas on Mars soon, so the market simply can keep expanding.
And then all the rabid Tesla fans can go to Mars, and that would be quite nice. And only the nice ones can stay. But yeah, so Tesla's doing, it's doing not as well as it expected, but I still wouldn't be unhappy with X billion dollars of, like, yeah, we made this much money. It's just lying around.
The main thing that is of note on that Q4 earnings call and report from last year is they, and I'm pretty sure they planted the story that morning, because Reuters reported that they were going to make some announcements about their next generation platform, which is supposed to underpin a much more affordable EV. And it's going to be built in Texas, possibly elsewhere eventually, but they want to bring costs way down and get an electric vehicle out to the masses in a way that even the Model 3 and Model Y haven't done. And they're sort of warning investors, like, look, like, things are going to slow until we ramp that up, and you're just going to have to deal. But this is a huge deal if they're really working on, like, a car this affordable. And I will get colleagues here, like, why is this a big deal? Like, Lacey, what do we think here?
Well, you know, what struck me listening to the earnings call was, you know, they were saying, oh yeah, we have these benefits that we've garnished over the years with the products that we have and the batteries with the 4680s and stuff. But the main thing, my main takeaway for this was the manufacturing process is going to be revolutionary. So that was very interesting, because they were very obviously tight-lipped about that. But they're like, this is something that no one in the automotive business is doing. This is a new method of manufacturing, and it is going to be designed in order to make the cost significantly lower. So they're starting it in Texas because they need the engineering support in order to design it completely, because they're not just going to a supplier and saying, hey, build us this machine. They're working with the supplier to build the, like, bespoke machine for them to manufacture, and they need that help and support at Texas so that they can get it up and ramped and running. And then eventually, once they have it all situated, they'll move it to whatever, like Patrick said, whatever factory, maybe Giga Mexico, maybe another facility that they'll build it in. But that was what struck me most in that earnings call, was that the manufacturing process is going to be so revolutionary that it's nothing that we've ever seen before. And that, I mean, I know we hear these phrases a lot in the United States.
I was going to say, Lacey, that I think Tesla, more than most, is perhaps a little bit more guilty of saying, you've never seen anything like
in the
this
world.
Before. It's going to be the most incredible thing. I've got the best words, all that nonsense. Like,
yes.
Very good
it. Very good words, man, woman, computer, TV, giraffe, elephant. But
let me ask this real quick. You know, Lacey's like 100% right about the factory again, the manufacturing techniques used to make, like, much cheaper EVs. Like, that's the big story here. That's the big development. But we also know that this process or versions of it are being chased by other car companies too. Like, we know the Chinese are working on it. We know BYD is working on this. We even know that Toyota's trying to catch up here. So, like, what are these manufacturing techniques that they're, you know, like from what we can glean so far? I mean, I believe it's a lot more automation in the factory. It's a lot more gigacasting instead of traditional welding. What intel does the group have here on what we might expect from this?
It's a platform built entirely using extracts from Elon Musk's ego. Therefore, it'll be strong, unimpeachable, and the best thing ever.
Infinite.
And available now.
Resources, never run out.
No doubt Elon Musk tears will be integrated into the manufacturing process. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say, because if he's saying it's so like out of this world, then it's hard to know. I mean, and he was just like, we can't say anything about it, but just know that it's like going to be an insane change of how vehicles are manufactured. And of course, we know this is going to be a smaller vehicle than it's like in a compact segment versus what we've seen them offer so far. But that was like my biggest takeaway, was that the he was like, we are going to be retracting this year. We're going to be a slow year, but know that we're working on this thing and it's going to be revolutionary as far as the manufacturing process.
There are lots and lots of things, especially when you're talking about a platform and you're talking about the assembly of the battery packs and kind of like how, which I assume they're also talking about battery packs and stuff with regards to this. There are lots and lots of things that can be improved, and one of them is major efficiencies in the accuracy of assembly. And if Tesla, this is me somewhat conducting a thought experiment where I'm like, can I imagine a world where Tesla has actually done this? But like, given that there do seem to have been significant manufacturing accuracy improvements with the Cybertruck from the models that have appeared so far, and that there was a focus on that, there is a possibility that they've, from the learnings from that, if they really were working on microns and things, which
yeah,
they weren't, because that don't make no sense, but anyway. But actually, when you're looking at like cathode and anode assembly, you do have to work on that level. There are other places that are claiming to have made gigantic efficiencies. Like there was a release today from Prologium about the fact they're manufacturing solid state vehicle batteries, which are now viable at least on a 2 gigawatt hour per year level, because they've made these efficiencies in the construction and stuff. So, and there is quite a long way to go. To be honest, the thing that worries me is they've done something bonkers with the already potentially oversimplified Tesla wiring harness,
mm-hmm.
which is where you could certainly save a lot.
Mm. You save a lot of money, space, wait, time, the whole nine, whether that's a good thing or not. But the good, like, if this does come off, as you know, Tesla is an organization, I think we can fairly say it changed the face of EVs. It made EVs that mainstream acceptable thing. But they were always really, really expensive. I mean, even a 3 or a Y, despite deals, or you can get a used one Avis or Hertz are selling off their fleet. You can get them affordably now, and there are some incredible lease deals going on. But it's still a lease deal on a very expensive product. If your base car is 25,000 US, which means in the UK it'll probably be £1 million. But if that entry level car does all the things that Tesla says its current product can do, and if it actually, you know, at least does a little bit of it, the game has changed again. Like, I give them credit where it's due. If they can actually pull it off,
I'm gonna be nice to Tesla here, because I can sometimes be a tough critic of Elon and Tesla. But the fact is that I think they are uniquely positioned to pull this off. They've done it before. I don't think it will be without issues, especially at first, because that's usually how this goes. But they had a great year. They had a great quarter. You know, I think that the bearishness on their stock price all of a sudden is a little misplaced. And like, this company's going to be able to pull this off. Like, they are very, very good at reinventing the machine that builds these machines. And so I think this is something to, it's really going to upend a lot of what we see in the auto industry when this drops. So I have full faith they're going to pull this off. Any other criticism of that company or Elon aside, this is something that they're positioned well to do, you know?
And in that earnings call, Elon also said what we've been saying, which is the Chinese are the main competition.
Yeah.
Every other automaker should be watching out, because guess who is able to compete in that realm? They are. So yep. That was a big statement he made too. Made sure to tell everybody.
at least he's admitting it, at least, rather than a sort of a bullishness and a perhaps unjustified confidence that we've seen before. I mean, look at Twitter or look at what's been said in public. At least he's going, yeah, we actually do need to pay attention to this now because it could be a bad, and we don't want it to be a bad for us, for the customers, for the shareholders, for all that. You know, infinite growth might not be possible if they take their eye off that ball, as a lot of legacy manufacturers have. You know, we've seen the likes of VW and co trying to play catch up with Tesla, and now trying to play catch up with BYD, with SAIC, with all those guys. At least he's actually admitting it, because I think that might give not only, you know, stockholders and the business side of this, but also the Tesla hardcore, the Tesla faithful, they might start taking stock and going, oh, hang on, our beloved might actually be a real thing rather than just this sort of benevolent overlord that hugs us with new product occasionally.
Yeah, and I've caught up with people at some of the European automakers, Volkswagen especially. Like, they are getting their clocks cleaned in Europe on their home turf by the Chinese automakers. And for now, like, our tariffs keep them out of our market in the United States. Everyone I talk to regards that as a temporary situation at best. But for now, it's almost a useful tool to have that boogeyman right there, that at the gates, you know, like that enemy that's right there. It's like, you better get moving. You see what's happening to Volkswagen in Europe. Like, we better get moving on this stuff, because when BYD comes in, like, they're not coming to play. And I think that is a useful motivator for these OEMs to move fast right now. The ones that aren't doing that are really going to pay for it later. So,
although, did you see Carlos Tavares say that it's going to be a bloodbath because of this, like, race to the bottom with the price cuts? Like, yeah. To me, like, it's so interesting to see that juxtaposition of his positioning. And to me, that is signaling to, like, hey, government, keep us afloat, please help. Like, this is a race to the bottom. We don't want to see this. We don't want anybody else to, like, try to go after this race to the bottom or whatever. Yeah, whereas you have other people
that's very much been Carlos Tavares's line. Yeah. Since yes. Literally the first Stellantis
exactly
call, when he said that companies are being mandated to make EVs but without any obvious way of making profit on them. Which I extremely respect Carlos Tavares's commitment to pointing out that making cars is stupid and unprofitable. But I mean, he's right, and he's also right to ask for investment, because that is the only way that these things are going to be profitable. Where that leaves the auto industry needy state.
If the entire automotive industry is propped up by their respective governments of origin, then, and still charging 50, 60, whatever million dollars, pounds, euros for their vehicles, you get a lot of people turn around and go, well, this isn't sustainable. I'm going to go to I'm going to go over here, or I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And all of a sudden, personal cars just start to look a bit like a Mickey take.
Well, that's what the oil industry is too, though.
Well, yeah.
We subsidize them so much.
For those who maybe missed this news this week, it's that, you know, Carlos Tavares, who is the CEO of a French private equity firm, Stellantis, their new STLA or Stella Large platform this week.
Yes.
And it underpins a bazillion different cars, like Alfa Romeos and Jeeps and Dodges. It's all of the big cars will be on this. But, and he says, we're not going to, like, price cut our way to irrelevance. Like, we're not going to chase Tesla. We're just not going to do it, because Carlos Tavares dreams of cost cutting and profits the way that the rest of us dream of, like, taking a nice vacation somewhere. It is what gets him out of bed every day. And you know, he's not wrong. It's like, I think when he says bloodbath, I appreciate the candor there, but it is, you know, this is the existential crisis facing these companies. It's that, like, it's going to be way more expensive than they thought to pivot to being a battery and software company. And they thought already it was going to be really expensive. So to Lacey's point, it's like, they're about to have their hands and their hats in their hands for more taxpayer dollars to get there. Cause, you know,
long have they had to do this? How long has the boogeyman of electrification been over the hill? You get, I, well, yep. when Nissan Leafs
that's how I feel it too.
Were in their infancy, and when, you know, the Toyota Prius was this funny little thing that celebrities bought, they could all see it coming, and they all went, nah, we'll stick to V8s, we'll stick to this, we'll stick to that. And it's like this, it's been blindingly staring you in the face for so long, and yet such little action to be taken. Like, oh no, the bulldozer's running my foot over. Oh, how terrible is this for me? Please, someone drag me out. It's like, you could have stepped left. You could have gone over there, but no.
Sorry. Part of this problem is that just, like, these are, you know, in some cases, 100-year-old or more companies that have vast networks of suppliers that have just built up over a century a certain way of doing things, and getting everybody to get on board with reversing course in the right way is, like, it's, like, near impossible. And I think that this is why I understand, like, Hyundai Motor Group is, like, this is one of the few legacy OEMs that's, like, done this right and, like, saw this early on. It was like, no, we're going full steam. We're going to do it. And everybody shut up. And this is the plan. And it's working. It's working nicely. And now you have these other OEMs that are sort of like, oh, well, we could go electric, but also we don't know what the adoption rate would be like, but also we really want to make V8s. And also half the company thinks that, you know, this is all bullshit and we don't really want to do it. So I don't know, you know.
There's proof that it can happen, though. That's what I love about this, is that there is like several examples that it can happen. Like, it can be done with good engineering and a good product.
And also Hyundai have like a mild advantage, because although large amounts of batteries come from China, there is a Korean battery industry. There is a Korean EV battery industry. And there's a lot of backing, huge amounts of the bleeding edge research into battery technologies, particularly for EVs, is done in Korea. So although the manufacture might end up taking place for a lot of places in China, there is a big industry there. And Hyundai was able to be like, oh, maybe we should, you know, be doing something about this instead of letting them all get sold to GM to stick into bulbs.
I mean, I think Patrick, what these legacy manufacturers are discovering are the seven most expensive words in business. That is how we always did it.
Yes.
And it good for you, but you're about to suffer at the hands of China and Tesla and Korea. And I think the very, very, very slow car crash is happening. And unless someone swerves quite violently, there's trouble. Anyway,
by bringing out a new little crossover or something.
By bringing out a new crossover, which leads us
crossover, guys.
The big story of the week.
$80,000 one.
$80,000. Yes, Porsche's new Macan is finally here after what seems like an eternity of build-up. There have been pre-production drives. I went to Leipzig last year to see where it would be built. It's the new mid-size Porsche. I mean, the original Macan, they've sold over 800,000 since 2014. And Patrick, if you want to feel very old, that means it's 10 years old. And I remember when it was coming out and the various websites we worked on were covering it. the old Macan, huge, it's got a huge following, like, because it is that perfect smallish family-ish car that you can park on a slightly damp school field going to the fete. You can park it in Trader Joe's and it will look good, but it will also go off-road. Now this new one, breathe in, because there's a lot of info, might kind of pass it out a little bit, but it will coexist with the internal combustion engine Macan as long as there is customer demand. So if anyone's worried, don't worry. It's been launched in two flavors, Macan 4 and Macan Turbo, which is notably absent from the internal combustion engine car. It's based on the premium platform electric, which Porsche has co-developed with Audi, though Porsche North America CEO did note that it was a mostly Porsche thing. So, you know, whatever you say, boss. It has been notoriously delayed, which is why the build-up seems to be interminable, because the software side of things has not worked out, which is also why the Audi version of this has been hideously delayed. It's a little bit bigger in pretty much every dimension than the original car, but it has a longer wheelbase, hence the really teeny tiny overhangs, presumably to make room for its 100 kilowatt hour battery, and 95 kilowatt hours of that is usable. It's, well, power-wise, the 4 starts at 402 horsepower. The turbo starts at 630 horsepower. It can have 833-pound foot of torque, which is mad. I mean, that is in special overboost mode. 0-62 takes 5.2 for the 4, 3.3 for the turbo. The 4 will do 137 miles an hour. The turbo, 161. The 4 will get 381 miles out of its battery, according to the WLTP test cycle. The turbo, 367. There's loads more in there, but I want to kind of kick off with the price. It's going to be, the 4 is 78,800 US. The turbo is 105,300 US, which is a lot of money. Let's start from there. There's loads more details, but otherwise I'll just be talking for 10 minutes. I've got pages of notes on this thing.
So this thing rules, I think. One thing I'll say also is, do you all remember like years ago when it was like, you know, when the Cayenne first came out and the Macan, it was like, oh, that's not a real Porsche. That's not a real Porsche. And you notice nobody says that anymore. Like those SUVs, they are so good looking and so fast and so nice.
Do you know why? Because all the people who wanted a 911 but couldn't justify one have gone, well, I've got a, it's not a real Porsche, but it's really comfortable. The kids fit in the back. It's quite quick, isn't it? Yeah. It's quite efficient.
Those are like legit now, and they deserve to be. And they took the second best selling car they have, and they said, screw it, it's going all electric. Like the, as Alex said, there is still a gas Macan. That is the old car. That is the existing outgoing car. It's just going to be hanging out until the EU says they can't sell them anymore or something. But it's they took one of their best models and said, screw it, we're going all electric. And I think that is a really remarkable and bold move. And it's the Volkswagen Group putting their money where their mouth is in a way we haven't seen in a minute. And it looks dope, I think. I really love the way this thing looks.
I've got two bits for what you just said. The first one being like Porsche saying it's called Macan, like they've given this product this name. Tim Stevens, the loveliest man in tech, did a wonderful interview with Tim Resch, Porsche Cars North America's new CEO. It's a really lovely piece. It's on Inside EVs. Do check it out. But the thing that really stood out, is that he said it's time to ditch the EV identifiers. So previously, Porsche EVs or hybridized electrified Porsches have had this sort of acid green, and there's E hybrid, and there's E this, and there's bright green brake calipers. And he's just gone, no, it's car. You know, we need to treat it as a car, which is
Macan. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not an EV. It's not a special thing. It's not a side project. This is the car. And it's Mercedes has announced it's going to start dropping the EQ stuff as time goes on. And this is, it's something that we know is coming. Eventually, an EV won't be an EV. It will just be a car. So this kind of tacit admission and leaning into it, I think is, not only is it cool, it's really important because the next Cayenne or the next whatever, and Porsche's quietly said there'll be a car above Cayenne, probably be EV, so that won't have an, it won't be an EXYZ, and it won't be a Cayenne or anything like that. It'll just be Cayenne. It'll be whatever. That's important.
Oh yeah, that's right. Real quick, there is like a larger 7-seat electric luxury SUV coming from Porsche, because my God, those people know
the Porsche Chungus.
Yeah, the Chungus. They know Americans. They know we love giant three-row crossovers that you will make the entire use of maybe once or twice a year, and they're going for it. God bless those people. They have us figured out.
Oh yeah. Well, it's one cursory glance around central London, like it's always the biggest SUV possible because I need the space for my piles of money, I guess.
Russian money laundering.
The other thing I want to kind of nod to is, Patrick, you think it looks good. I think it looks weirdly dumpy. It looks like half an egg. And the reason why is because they've got that black kind of scuff plate on the bottom of the doors, as the ICE Macan does. But because the battery's in the bottom of it, and I noticed this when I stepped into a prototype for a passenger ride a while ago, if you look at the side of it, the battery slab is also black plastic, and once you see it, you can't unsee it. So it looks weirdly tall and weirdly dumpy, and they've had to do so much with it. So the DRLs are what you think are the headlights, and then what looks like air vents are the actual headlights, but they're so high off the ground. It just looks weird.
Well, every crossover looks weird. I mean, It's just it looks a lot like a Taycan, which is great, I think, because the Taycan looks awesome. It's never going to look as good as a Taycan because you've got to take this really handsome aerodynamic sleek shape and make it tall and fat and long and wide. And it like, if you're going to take that design language, I think they translated that to SUV as well as any human being possibly could with the constraints of like crash tests and everything else the regulations make them design cars around now.
I mean, no, I
like it. It's more coupey than the last Macan was too. So
I'll definitely concede that, but to me it just looks like the old one is standing on a box to try and look up at his bigger brother.
I actually agree. I literally thought the same thing, Alex, when I saw that. I was like, you know, the old Macan had like that differentiator in the body panel like that, but it didn't have that plastic all the way around the bottom of it. It was body colored, so it didn't look as like jarring. Like, I thought the exact same thing as you. I don't know if I like the design of this. I'm like torn because like what you're saying with the Taycan, like you can see some obviously elements in the front and the headlights and stuff like that, but in the body side of the Taycan, it's like very muscular. You know, you got a really defined like shoulder line and really defined hips, and I feel like there's a lot lost in this, which the Macan was an egg anyway, so like but there were a little bit longer overhangs I think in the front that made it look more like it was stretched out, that gave it that like Porsche design element. So I see what you're saying here. I can't decide if I like it or not. It just it is very egg-like.
Once you notice the black plastic kind of rim on the bottom that it's sitting on, you can't unsee it because it's black to hide hide the fact that it's there. And that the Macan kind of black scuff plate was on the original car there to kind of hide a bit the visual weight and bring the look of the car up, so you don't see what lies beneath. But in this, it looks like it's on a tray. It does make me wonder though if the facelift will have a body colored thing or whether they'll find a way to more efficiently hide it. But it looks weird.
I, for one, think it's sick that the new Porsche crossover is like riding on a little skateboard. but also, and I hope to one day smell one of these when I'm like, I don't know, changing bus in Chelsea or something. I think it looks great from the front and great from the side. It looks really Porsche-y from both of those directions, but the rear is horrendous. Like, and the rear of the Macan has always looked like properly horrible, to the point that I was saying to everyone on Slack yesterday, I actually stopped halfway through a voice note to my friend on my way back from the supermarket yesterday to complain for about 30 seconds about how horrible the old Macan rear end looked. And they really haven't improved it. So that's my comment. It's got a terrible arse. So
I mean the arse end does look a little bit like an old school Cylon if it had been sandblasted.
I will say it could possibly feel different in person, so like take it with a grain of salt as far as like and obviously
not helping it.
Yeah, and design is also personal preference, but it might look and feel different in person, but from the images it just like makes it look like an egg.
I've stood next to a very heavily cladded prototype, and it is very tall, and it does look quite chunky monkey. There's some pictures of them hammering prototypes around their test track in Leipzig, and it just looked a bit weird because it's three of them going up a hill, one of them arse out doing a nice big skid.
How big is it compared to like the Ioniq 5?
I would say it's
bigger.
Bigger, like much bigger.
Actually, I was surprised.
Height-wise.
I was looking at the dimensions in comparison to some of the competitors, and I was actually surprised like how big it is compared to other things on the market. Like I had pulled up here, I'll pull up real quick. I was looking at the Polestar 3. The Polestar is bigger than the Macan. Genesis GV60. Someone was saying in one of my comments when I posted the specs about this that that was like similar vibes, but that is much smaller than the Macan. It's closer in size to the GV70 electrified, but even so, it's still longer than that, which was kind of interesting to me because that's I classify that as like a compact midsize kind of. But it's kind of close like to in size small. Of the EQE SUV.
Oh, really? Because yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah.
If it was a hot hatch, I actually love how it looks. Like if you squiggle this.
If it was like the same proportions but 75%. Sadly, you can't get a 100 kilowatt hour battery in that kind of. Well, I guess you could if it was folded in on itself, but then the dimensions would be really weird. Let's talk about the interior. Let's have a quick natter about that, because there are lots of screens. You can have up to three. So your instrument binnacle is 12.6 inch. There's loads of information in there. One of the very cool things about it is the infotainment itself is built on the Android Automotive architecture. But what you can do if you have Android Auto at the moment, and I've been dying for this feature in other cars for years now. If you've got Android Auto on your phone and you use Google Maps, they can then fire the Google Maps info into the instrument binnacle rather than you having to look down at the screen. So I was in a Kia EV6 GT this week. I had Apple CarPlay going. I use Google Maps rather than the in-house one because it's easy. I know it. I trust it. But I couldn't then have that information on the instrument binnacle itself. So you can do that with Android Auto and Google Maps. Now, I know they're working on getting Apple to let them do the same with Apple CarPlay. It is obviously compatible with Apple CarPlay. Long gone are the days where this vehicle is only Android Auto and this vehicle is only Apple CarPlay, because that was an insane decision for anyone to make. Your infotainment screen is 10.9 inches, and you can have an optional display for the passenger, which is also 10.9 inches. Now, what's cool about this is that Porsche's engineers are keenly aware that in-house systems can be a little bit slow to wake up in the morning. Yeah, I'm sure we've all kind of gotten into a car and you've turned it on and you go, right, so I want to use the nav and I want to listen to the radio and I want to actually leave on my journey. And it's like a P75 from 1996, kind of slowly chugging away and sorting itself out. Porsche knows that. It's basically put a team on it and going, please make this not rubbish because we want to sell cars. It's quick. They've got a new audio assistant, or they've got an updated audio voice assistant that will listen to contextual things and is quick and kind of gets to it. It's easier to talk to, so you don't have to be a robot with it. I guess my question for you all is, one, are we excited about maps, like external maps being on the instrument binnacle? I am. Two, what do you think of the passenger display screen?
So we had the EQE recently with the hyper screen, and I showed it to my wife who's riding shotgun with me, and she's like, I don't really know what to do with this. Like, I have a screen in front of me. It's neat. I think she did some climate stuff. She's like, it's okay. And then sort of went back to like being on her phone. Yeah. So like, it's a neat option. I don't think we've quite tapped to what these things can do yet. I think long term you're going to see more streaming, more gaming on all these screens.
If memory serves, you can download TikTok to the vehicle, so you can record
some dance videos in your.
If Macan, anyone got into my $100,000 Porsche in this world where I've got one of these and put TikTok on the dashboard, I cannot describe the speed with which they would be ejected.
You mean you don't want to watch the family as they dance their way around town? I mean, there is a special coating applied to that screen, so drivers can't be distracted. It's not like the old Jaguar Land Rover used to have a system, their dual view, which essentially is like where, you know, when you go to the cinema and you have the 3D glasses and you close one eye and close the other and it kind of merges the two, except it's two images overlaid. So the driver can only see the nav side and the passenger can only see the video side, unless the driver leans over while they're driving, and then they can watch whatever the passenger's doing.
I think something that would be genuinely useful, and I don't know how much it already has this functionality, but I have seen one or systems that slightly allow this, is like, for instance, if you need to look up a load of stuff on the route that you're going on maps, like, oh, when's on the next petrol station, or like where's some nearby restaurants, or like whatever, being able to give that control to the passenger so they can do it, so that it's not like distracted driving and not having to use voice or whatever. And also, like, because that's the kind of thing it's actually useful to do, because yes, otherwise the passenger's going to use their phone. They're not logged into your car. And they probably don't want to be, really. I don't know. That seems like the kind of thing that would actually be... Maybe I'm just being, like, incredibly middle-aged here. But...
No, I agree with that.
A bigger question to me is, are all these tech features going to work? And that's a question we must ask here because, like Alex alluded to earlier, this is a super important car for the VW group, period. Like, this software architecture is on this car. It's been delayed a bunch. It's the product of this huge company-wide reorganization to actually get good at software and get all these Volkswagen Group 11 billion brands on the same page about tech in these vehicles. And it's pushed the development back, I think, over a year. Like, it was supposed to be out by now, the Audi Q6 e-tron, its platform mate was supposed to be out by now. So they staked a lot on this car. Like, the electric Macan is a bigger deal than I think people think, just kind of across the board. So they have all these big promises, but, like, their software game, their tech game at Volkswagen has not been amazing yet. Like, they've struggled as much as GM has, I think, in a lot of ways. So are they going to nail it this time?
Well, I don't... answer your question with a question. Would Porsche let a car out that didn't work properly? Because I don't think it has yet.
No. It might let out a car that proved to be unreliable after a certain sort of number of miles.
I mean, yeah, 911 GT3s did go a little bit on fire for a spell. But
now they're icons.
But I also think there's a difference between Porsche's on the edge sports cars where they basically go like, look, do you want a race car or not? Like, it's going to have some weird behavior. And something like the Macan, like the Cayenne, where it's like, that's not what this is. Like, and it's not what it's trying to sell itself as. It's selling itself as, sure, this is a Porsche, but, like, it's also a reliable SUV. And it's not promising to be a Volvo in that respect. It's not selling itself on safety. It's not selling itself on whatever. It's very much selling itself on being a luxury Porsche vehicle with performance aspects. But I think Porsche and the VW group know that, for instance, if the Cayenne had proven to be a reliability nightmare, it would not have been the savior of Porsche's finances, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they you're right. They're always there's always kind of jokes about the VW group, the car's reliability, but every time, you know, Porsche is always up there with like Lexus and Toyota and their quality. Like they're known for being really dialed in. And I think if this car has a bazillion issues, it's going to be a black eye. Like, they really don't want as a brand and as a conglomerate either.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Porsche, go ahead, Alex.
No, after you, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, like, this is Android OS, right, that it's based on. So technically you could ask this what 50 Cent is up to. And, you know, that just sells the car for me. So if the infotainment system can tell me that, I'm sold.
I'll but take the, three.
Right. No, the interior, I think, looks good. And I like all the screens. Did you see pictures of the head-up display? That looks amazing. Oh, my goodness. I love that. But I don't like the floating weird console thing. I like the mix of the buttons on that little panel that's right below the screen, but I don't. That seems chunky and it takes up a lot of weird space.
So Porsche has gone for physical buttons and for the important stuff, because obviously over the last few years there was this pivot away from buttons and touchscreen, all the things, which has ended up in people being annoyed, especially if it's done badly. So you get one manufacturer that gives you maybe a little bit of haptic feedback when you hit your mark, one that doesn't, so you have no idea what you're doing when you're driving and you have to look down, and you know that's a little dicey. The head-up display I do love, especially as it's got AR functionality that promises many wonderful things. And AR, when done well, is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, because if you're like me and have a terrible sense of direction, the nav says take the second exit and you're like, but which one? There are lots of second exits and I'm scared and confused and alone, please help. No, do love that. The center console thing, I don't dislike it. It's just a big tray for phones, isn't it?
It just doesn't seem as functional, you know. I don't know. What do you guys think? What do people in the chat think? Does that bother you? I don't know why it bothers me. It just seems like it's intrusive for no reason.
Yeah, like, I don't like the idea of, like, just a place where things can disappear under them, where you might be trying to reach for them in a car where you shouldn't be looking. Like, I just don't like it on that level. But also, I mean, I've just said this in like the backstage chat of the podcast, but like, where are you going to put the cup holders? Because I understand this is an important factor for American reviews.
I think there's one in the pool.
They are really bad at that, Porsche is, which is hilarious, because like they know Americans really well, and they know that we've got to drive around with the biggest gulp we can get at all times. I mean,
Porsche with branded Stanley
in this car right now, and you know, like, that's just how I operate. And if this car can't do that, I don't know. They maybe BYD does deserve to take over the industry, you know.
Question from Ben Hillard in the comments about the OS. Is Android Automotive the infotainment? Is it using Google Play services, or did they design something in-house? There is a Porsche app store. I can't remember exactly what it's called, a Porsche Connect or something. That's your hub. So your phone can connect to the car. And in the car, you can see on one of the images here on the passenger display, that's where your apps go, and you can go into an app store, I think, on either of those, and it's Porsche branded, it's Porsche designed behind the scenes. I don't know, but yeah, it's
VW Group is doing their own app store as well, so I wish I had a better answer to this right offhand, but I think they're not doing the full-on just like, yeah, we're letting Google Play do everything, but they are doing like integration with a lot of other apps and a very familiar back end, but it's its own thing. Like VW says, like, no, we want our own app store. We don't want to just cede that to the tech companies. So, you know.
So one last thing before we move on to stuff what we has driven. Let's talk performance, because obviously it's I'm Porsche, and racing is in our DNA, or motorsports in our DNA is written all over every Porsche Experience Center. So we talked power earlier. I mean, up to 833 pound-foot torque when you press the magic I want to overtake and win everything button. 0-62, 3.3 seconds. Now, if you're a nerd like me, Porsche's lots of numbers coming up. The 997.2 911 GT Turbo S did 0-6. No, sorry. 991.1 Turbo S would do 0-62 in 3.3 seconds. That's from an internal combustion engine car, and that's like the top flight car, unless you go for the race car. That is an insane amount of speed, and Porsche always, always overstates its time. So I would comfortably say it's closer to 3. So in the ideal conditions with the right tires, tailwind, whatever. What is cool about it though, so Tim Stevens, again, loveliest man in tech, also did that the interview with Tim Resch. He's also driven a prototype in California, and he was talking about the rear steer. So it's an option, but it makes the turning circle 36.4 feet, which is about the same as a Corolla, which is really quite impressive. Tim was kind of blown away by it. You also get variable steering ratios for that, so it works incredibly well. It's a technology that, you know, it's tried, it's tested, it's been on a bunch of other Porsches, it's been on a bunch of everything really. You can get it on a Rolls-Royce Phantom, but that is cool. Also, it's got air suspension, so it's nice and adaptable. You can go up to 8.8 inches from the standard 7.2. I think as a performance product, I've sat in one. My driver was doing big skids in it, and I said, "Oh, does it do it easily?" And he just turned to me with a big toothy grin and went, "Yeah, it's not. They're not messing about with it. It's going to be for all that, you know." We were talking earlier about how, you know, earlier people, when Cayenne came out and when Macan came out, people saying, "Oh, it's not a proper Porsche." This is a proper Porsche. It just happens to be electric. I think it will be perhaps.
I mean, Porsche really should be making electric performance cars, because they supplied the powertrain for the reigning Formula E world champion. They've won all the races so far, which is admittedly one, in this season. And I know kind of no one cares about Formula E, but it is a very tight championship where there's a lot of development. Yeah. They are making electric performance powertrains on a pretty high level. And like
so this is a good start for them. It's what they should be doing and should have been doing.
Yes, although I do have, and I was sort of complaining about this earlier, but some of the elements of Porsche's release about this are really odd. Like when it's talking about the specs and the performance and stuff, there's moments where, and this is properly like nasal voiced auto journalist, like pedantry, but also that's why we have nasal voice auto journalist pedants. And like, you would not, if this was an ICE car, you would not have a release come out that called something a turbocharged turbo V6 or something like that, because that's unnecessary. And the strange phrasing, like permanently excited PMS electric motors, which permanently excited and PMS are the same thing, and PMS is like it's sort of like saying the same thing almost three times. And
I wonder whether
struggling to communicate their own technology, basically.
I wonder if there's an element of that, of like the wider industry doesn't know. So if someone was going to read it, that just needs to be explained in baby steps, perhaps. Anyway, I am permanently excited about the new Macan. There you are. There's a slick link. We've got 10 minutes left. And the good thing is, both Patrick and I have been driving some things. Patrick, tell us all about your Volvo XC40 Recharge.
Yeah, Volvo reached out, like, do you want to recharge? And I was like, sure. And
I could do with a holiday.
Yeah, why not? This is the updated for 2024 Volvo XC40 Recharge I'm in right now. I opted for the single motor extended range one. I tend to prefer more range over more performance. If just honestly, I don't love these like dual motor super fast cars that have like 200 miles on them. Plus, even a standard range EVs is usually pretty quick these days. But I like this thing that I'm driving a lot. I love the size of it. My family is just my wife and our little dog. And so, like, we don't need a ginormous SUV or truck. And it's really capable. And I love all of the Google stuff in this car, which it has the Google built-in, deeply integrated into the system. And you can kind of ask it stuff. And we could try that now if we want to. Do we want to?
Go on. Try it. Try it, Patrick. Try it.
Try this, Sirocast. Hey, Google. What is gigacasting?
On the website spglobal.com, they say, gigacasting is all the rage in automotive manufacturing circles. And while Tesla has mainstreamed the term, involving enormous, high-pressure aluminum die-casting machines that punch out vehicle chassis and bodies in white, the technology has largely caught on in mainland China.
Yeah, I love this car. I'm going to hire it. It's the new intern, and it's cheap. It works for electrons. This thing's dope. Like I've never really been like this into a car because of its infotainment system before, but you could say like, you know, hey, G word, let's go to Vegas, and it'll map it out. And here's all the charging stops along the way. And, you know, it's all sort of going this way. The whole industry, they want you to be like, hey, you know, car, I'm hungry and I want some pasta. Like, okay, here's like six good Italian restaurants in the area. This is the one you should go to. And also it has a charger nearby. So I don't know. I like this thing a lot, and me and Google are best friends now. Hopefully when the machines take over, it doesn't murder me someday. Try to be nice.
Patrick, I will spare you because you were nice to me when you asked me about 50 Cent.
I always say please and thank you. Just I want the machines to know that I'm
my mom does that. Yeah. It's really weird. She gets her Amazon Echo, said, Alexa, turn the lights on, please. And when it does, thank you. Okay. You do that. I mean, she'll be spared. I will not.
Politeness costs nothing, Alex.
Yeah. And you're in a car this week, Alex. You've been driving a car yourself also.
So I just realized there's an echo in my office. And when I was mocking my mum, it started talking. So sorry about that. Whoops. Yes, I have been drovening a VW ID7 because I realized I haven't driven any ID products. And they went, well, come up and drive the ID7. Also had a quick squirt in the ID3 and ID4. ID4, I think, is largely pointless. The ID3 is great, but the ID7 was the star of the show. In the UK, I haven't translated it to Freedom units yet. The model I drove starts at £51,550 of the King's finest. It's got a 77 kilowatt hour battery, 286 horsepower, rear drive, hi all, not 66.5. It'll get 383 miles out of an battery. They say, well, that's what they say. They say you can get up to 4.7 miles per kilowatt hour out of it. 20 to 80% charge in not long at all, 28 minutes. It'll take 175 kilowatt charger. It's really heavy, and a heat pump is a £1,000 option. So that's the kind of top line stat. Here's the rub. It is very aggressively an car. It's okay at everything. Like, the interior feels solidly VW, which some of the earlier ID products didn't. It still has that kind of touch sensitive heater stuff and volume stuff, but it does light up now. It's got an all new infotainment setup, which is, there's lots of things buried in lots of menus, but it does kind of work. VW UK brought an expert down to show us all how to get the best out of it, which is partly, I think, them going, look, it does work, it's really good, but also an admission that you might need to take a little bit of time to get used to it. But the thing I really liked about it was, off of that 77 kilowatt hour battery, even with me driving like an absolute spanner, I still managed to get 4 miles per kilowatt hour out of it. You know, I wasn't on any kind of, I was on mixed roads. So there was a little bit of highway, a little bit of town, and then lots of really fun countryside with a surprise speed camera or two. And it felt really good. Like, I'm like you, Patrick. I prefer, especially in EVs, I prefer range over punch. And it's, you know, for what it could be, I mean, VW could turn around and go, it's got 400 horsepower, it's got 500 horsepower, and it could have been a rocket. But actually, it had enough grunt to get me down the road comfortably, smoothly. You do feel its weight. It's 2.6 tons or so, say my notes, which that's a lot of tons. That's a lot of tons. But it's just a solid car. I was thinking about it as I was driving around. Like, out of those three, of the three, I would have an ID7 as the car to just nail up and down the highway, because it doesn't eat that much electricity. It's comfy and it's quiet. It doesn't encourage lunatic driving, but it doesn't hate it either.
I just think they're going to have a tougher sell with this thing in the United States. Like, we've really moved on from the sedan market. And it's like, you look at electric sedans, you get a Model 3, you get a screaming deal on one. You get an Ioniq 6, which is an amazing, amazing car that looks really, really mind-blowing. And you can also get a screaming deal on one now if you know where to look. This is probably not as athletic as like a BMW i4 or certainly a Tesla Model S. It's VW's tried to be sort of a luxury brand here many times, and it never really works out. So I'm just not sure what the case is or why you'd buy the ID7, unless it's just one of those cars where you drive it and it just does it for you for whatever reason, which happens. Yeah. That happens to lots of people. And I've had cars like that, but, I'm not real sure why I would tell someone to buy the ID7 over other choices.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not sure I see it as anything that will go. I would be really surprised if they try and push them in the US.
Yeah, like a little.
There will be an estate, which I'm very excited about.
Now we're talking.
Long roof cars are the best. But no, I thoroughly enjoyed my time in it. Incidentally, after a day of driving, kind of quite comparatively staid ID products, I've been tooling around in a Kia EV6 GT this week. I drove the rear drive and the all wheel drive ones a couple of years ago. And it's needlessly fast. I like the fact that it's very fast, but I got into that having been in the sensible cars and just went, why am I sacrificing efficiency and speed for? Why am I sacrificing efficiency? I don't need any more power. I think I'm mellowing in my old age. I'm not sure.
To me, it's like, it's easy for the automakers to make it a faster EV, so they go with that. It's not as easy to give you more range, you know? Like, it's just an easy button to flip.
It's an easy win. You lose, all of a sudden your 300 and whatever mile range becomes a 250 mile range, but it's got 700 horsepower.
You and I are also spoiled, Alex. At least that's how I've gotten as I coast into middle age too. Like, I've done the job I've done. Like, I've driven 911 turbos. I've driven the Bugatti Veyron. Like, I don't care if a car is fast anymore. Like, I don't it's just it's like been there, done it. Like I want something that's like nice and has it, that I don't actively hate every day. And that's
you want a nice pair of slippers and a cardigan.
Yeah, just like whatever, you know, like it's, yeah, I don't know. I've gotten a lot of speeding tickets in my life. I went to jail for speeding once.
You like, did. It's an incredible story. Google it. It's amazing. One of the best mea culpas I've ever seen.
Shenanigans. It's fine. Just give me the extended range single motor and some decent tech, and I'm good.
I mean, I also think there's an element of like, do I particularly want to share roads with cars that have all this frankly excessive power, when like, no, not really. like you're taking your car's bodywork into your hands if you get on the M25 full stop, because there's like massive lorry
British drivers
overtaking games.
Yes.
But like, especially for instance in the wet and stuff, like do I necessarily think that there's wide enough EV adoption that we understand the potential safety consequences of these launch modes and the fact that they can be...
It's a lesson you learn once.
Yeah.
It's a lesson you learn once.
And
friends, on that, we have come to the end of another Super Shiny Inside EVs podcast. Before we go, huge thanks to our man behind the scenes, Danny Howard, who's been making everything look and sound super, super shiny. If you want to get in touch with us to talk about anything, you can find us on social medias if you want to, but do email contact@insideevs.com and we'll have a read of your thoughts. We'll be back same time next week with lots of, hopefully more news. If the EV news train stops, we're in real trouble, but ho-hum, we'll find out next week. For now, it's goodbye from me and goodbye from Hazel Southwell, Misco Electric, Lacey herself, and Patrick George. See you next week, friends. Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Goodbye.